At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
We have been in a superhero moment for a while now, which is kind of strange to me as a kid that grew up when comic books and superheroes were still very much the territory of weird little nerds, weird little geeks like me. But seeing that we've got Superman right ahead of Fantastic Four on the cusp of like a 2-decade-long anniversary of the MCU turning into yet another big giant arc, and all of the success that's been had around the Disney Plus show Ironheart, among all of these other superheroes, it has me wondering, what is our sudden and prolonged fascination with superhero media? Like, I know that there's been a lot of criticism about superheroes, right? And about how superhero media is kind of taking over pop culture. It's absorbing all of the budgets that would otherwise go to mid-budget films. And I'm not saying that there's not some value to that critique, but I'm wondering, why do we continue to turn to these stories? What is so specifically appealing about them? What are we finding in stories of caped crusaders and web slingers and magical or mutant misfits that we don't find in other kinds of media? So, as always, I decided to ask an expert. Ernie Carruthers runs the channel Blurred Without Fear. He walks his massive YouTube audience not just through the present and future state of superheroes, but also looks back in time to see where all of this came from. Everything from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to Silverhawks to Thundercats and Gargoyles, and as of pretty recently, witches, when he had me on his show to discuss my upcoming novel, Verity Vox and the Curse of Foxfire. Here's Ernie Carruthers. Ernie Carruthers, welcome to Head on Fire. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
The Blurred Without Fear himself. Welcome to my neck of the patioverse.
Hey, I like it over here. It's not.
I had to run and you know, dress to match. I was like, well, I can't not.
You know what? Honestly, I think that is that like kind of like a, you know, forgive me for my heathenness, because I never learned the full color wheel. But what shade is that, like a shade of pink?
It is pink.
On
yes.
Your
this is pink. See, it's all pink. It's all like, this is hot pink. This is like a pale pink. This is pink. I've got rainbows. This is the shirt without Jean. Yeah, so I had to get a different shirt with Jean. Mm. So yeah, this, but yeah, I've got my X-Men 97, and I wore it like every week when the show was coming.
There's
when
not enough
the show
pink
was
airing. Ones.
Yeah, yeah. I found this at the grocery store.
Yeah, there's not enough pink ones.
Ernie, welcome to my show. For people who don't know you or what it is that you do, tell people about yourself. Who are you? What do you do?
So, you know, I'm a dude who talks into a microphone and camera on the internet about comic books and comic book related things. And there are people who take me seriously.
Can I ask? So your YouTube channel is kind of massive, which congrats.
Yeah.
Making it on YouTube
Thank
is
you.
A scary thing. That's a terrifying place for little babies like me. Where did Blurred Without Fear come from?
You know, so it's funny. The whole idea was, I was trying to come up with a name that like mm-hmm. actually matched what I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as most people usually want. But it was funny. I was originally going to call myself just The Nerd Without Fear. But there was another YouTube channel. Uh-huh. That was steadily producing content at the time that was also called Nerd Without Fear. But I was like, man, I really like this name and I kind of want to steal it. But I don't know. I'll have to come up with something else. And then I was listening to a Childish Gambino song, of all things. And I heard the term blurred. And I heard him say, shout out to my blurreds. And I was like, blurred. I've never heard this word before. Mm-hmm. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, that's what that is. So, but it all stemmed from a Daredevil reference, because Daredevil's objectively one of my favorite superheroes.
Really? I'm gonna have to put mm-hmm. a pin in yep. that and come back to it. I think it's interesting, like
who people's favorite superheroes are. Your channel is, you know, your public platform is really like all about, you know, geek culture, nerd culture, superheroes and fantasy and all of that kind of stuff. I am really interested in this, not only as a lifelong fan, but I do think that we kind of grab onto archetypes of characters, super beings at times. And, you know, we've seen that with werewolves. We've seen it with ghosts. We've seen it with witches. We've seen it with all sorts of, you know, kind of supernatural beings. The superhero is kind of a modern take on some of those. I mean, you know, some people have likened them to like their modern myths. They're just the modern Greek gods, right? We, you know, except for Wonder Woman, she's, so I'm just kind of curious.
It's like a tail inside a tail.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious because each of those is born out of a kind of conversation. You know, do we live on after death? Mm-hmm. You know, zombies sometimes represent conversations around disease and infection and, you know, fear of the body and body horror and werewolves. You know, all of these things kind of have a conversation about them. Robots in science fiction are a conversation about technology. What is the conversation that you think people are having through superheroes?
Man, for me, it's always been about morality. Like, And I don't know what that says about me as a person, because I mean, yes, I get my morality, you know, from, you know, my parents, but like there are a lot of things that I learned about through comics. Really? Like my my first, I guess, with you know, or I guess brush would probably be a better way to put it. My first brush with a lot of things were, you know, through comics. Were you know, certain ideas, certain, you know, ways of looking at things, the idea of, you know, like, you know, looking to like characters like, you know, your Captain America's, your Batman's, your, you know, Spider-Man's, and so on and so forth. You know, just the idea of like, you know, even when something's not a popular thing to do, you know, you do it anyway, which, I mean, you know, a lot of great, you know, leaders in history can teach you that. But like, as a kid who doesn't care about those things, when I'm like 4 or 5 years old, you know, I don't care about the revolution. I just want to see Spider-Man punch somebody. You know, when I'm that age and, you know, and a little bit older, you know, a lot of that stuff, I was like, man, dude, that's, yeah, I believe this. Yeah, this is what heroes do. Heroes, even when it's inconvenient, you know, they fight the good fight. You know, maybe you have to make a sacrifice of, you know, for the greater good, you know, stuff like that. But I do find a lot of people, you know, for better or worse, get their morality from comic books. I like to think of myself as on the better side of that, but, you know, not entirely cooked.
Can I ask? That's such an interesting response. I don't disagree. And I can absolutely see how you come to that. I'm curious, did you start with DC or Marvel or something else?
Ooh, so DC was where I started.
That makes sense. That's what I thought. That was my guess.
Yeah.
I thought so. I was like, that's a DC answer. That is a Superman answer. That is a DC
answer. That was what I used to get. My mother, I'm going to tell myself, give away some age. So when I was a little kid, you could have comics. I mean, not to say you can't have this now. Of course, you can. But like, it was hyper uncommon back then to have comics mailed to your house. So when I was like 4 or 5 years old, that was what I used to get. Like, you know, I would get whatever was the latest copy of Superman, latest copy of Batman, would get mailed to my house, and I read comics. And it kind of had a huge impact on me, because it was technically how I learned to read. But like Superman and you know, Batman and stuff like that, yeah, those were very big morality plays. Probably more than they were superhero stories. But yeah, that's where that comes from.
No, I appreciate that. And the reason I said that seems like a DC answer, because I do feel like, especially in like DC's big three, DC has always felt for me more like, if you're looking for individual superhero, like if you're looking for the superhero, you do go to DC. Like, they really do have the iconic, like, individual superheroes, not only the big three, you know, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, but they really do a good job of having like individual characters that carry their own books, you know, and really have like a singular deep dive. Whereas Marvel, my first love, you know, is more about like the team, is more about the family, is more about the found association and community. I think it's like a community first thing. And I think that the DC always kind of has superhero first thing, but I my answer to that question is, and I think it's just because I came to it through Marvel, is that we are looking for the capital S somebody to come in and save us. And we just want to believe in a world, even for 5 minutes, where there is someone somewhere who could come in and stop the bad things from happening. And no matter how bad the bad guy is, they can't take down capital S somebody. You know, that person, that entity, that team can, you know, offer us safe harbor. And I just, yeah, I think, but I like your answer too.
Well, it's a, man, we have come to find that, I think it's also not even just that. We see that person. Like, I remember being a kid thinking, dude, it would be so cool to be Batman.
Sure.
It'd be so cool to be Batman. Like, nowadays, I don't want to be Batman. I'm good.
I was going to say, then you get older. This won't work out. And then the world got more complicated. And then you were like, no, he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
Oh, no. He's like the billionaire. Like, Tony Stark's up there. But, like, when it comes to, like, iconic, rich superheroes, Batman is Batman.
Batman is, if Jeff Bezos decided one day he wanted to put on a costume and just go beat the snot out of the mentally ill, that is basically what Batman is sometimes.
Though I will say, like, I did see a really interesting, I saw somebody do journalism about this very serious subject that has implications to our real life, about who the richest fictional character is. Is it Tony Stark? Is it Batman? Is it whoever? And they determined, using their very serious scientific journalism, whatever research, that it was actually Scrooge McDuck. That Scrooge McDuck is the wealthiest fictional character, like, by far. So that's, there you go.
Because you can actually see his money too. Like,
and
see,
it's gold.
It's there. It's like, it's not.
It's just. Yeah, this,
it's
like,
not intangible.
It's also diving into hard metal. What is Scrooge McDuck made of? Like, does he also have Kitty Pryde's powers? Like, is he? That's something. That's like death right there.
I think there's something he didn't tell us. I think there's something Uncle Scrooge did not tell us. And so, I think it's that he's a mutant. I believe it.
I am curious, because it isn't just, you know, superheroes have been around for quite a while now, you know, better part of the last century or so. They come to us. I think I saw an article one time that told us that a lot of superheroes, like the costume and the fact that they all have code names and stuff, like, that comes from old wrestling culture, like old, you know, wrestling circus culture way back in the day. So, you know, they've been around a long time. They've kind of evolved with us. They've gotten stronger. They've gotten more powerful. But a lot of that happened in comic books. We did have comic book movies from time to time. Very few of them were good, and even fewer, like, were any kind of commercial success at all. But that changed after the new millennium. After the new millennium, we slowly started, like, we got X2. Like, X-Men was fine, but X2, I think, is kind of credited with that kind of breakthrough of critical commercial acclaim, and then it started that trajectory of the modern kind of team-up superhero. It certainly laid the groundwork for the MCU being a possibility. But then, you know, we have been in this, like, nearly 20-year-long run of superheroes dominating cinema. And I'm curious why you think that is.
I think, and this is going to be a reason that I know there's going to be somebody out there in the world that's going to feel attacked. I think because when we were all kids, we loved superheroes. We loved superheroes. We loved comics. And a lot of us were secret nerds, but we didn't want other people to know. But, like, I was an open nerd. I was very, it was very obvious. I wore on my sleeve that I loved comic books. It made me no friends whatsoever. But there were lots of people I knew growing up who I knew liked comics. I used to see them in the comic shop. But if I saw them at school and I breathed so much as one word about them liking comics, because they knew the stigma that would come with, they would just be like, don't you say a word. I have actually had people, when I would go to the comic shop, if we went to the same one, they would be like, don't you say a word.
Just
don't you breathe a word of this. Story.
I've had a few videos go viral where I mentioned that, like, liking superheroes or Power Rangers, or, you know, waiting up to watch X-Men on Saturday morning, that was not cool at all. It was, in fact, something you definitely would get picked on and beaten up for. And I have so many people in the comics that are like, it's not true. There's no way that that's true. These things are so popular. And blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you are 19. You've literally never lived in a world where this was not like the zeitgeist. I just don't think you quite understand what like 1993 was like. 1996.
No, I remember. I remember because I went to a school where word got out that at my birthday party, I was given, this was like when the Power Rangers first came out. My mother had gotten for me the entire... Who were you? So my blackness will not allow me to say anything other than Zach.
But, okay.
But my, I was also my a gayness big Trini won't let fan me say anything as well.
I'm Billy. Yeah. I wanted to be Billy and Mary Jason.
Which, by the way, you know what I love about that is that, like, even as a kid, I could always, like, kind of look at Billy and be like, something feels inauthentic about this.
Oh, yeah. About this. Well, I don't know, but then later he took his glasses off and got hot, and it was like...
Yeah. Well, it was just like, I grew up with, you know, I grew up with gay people in my life. Uh-huh. So, like, I always kind of felt like I could usually get a feeling. Like, I usually be like, no. I'm like, dude, let this guy live his truth. Let him live his truth. Because I think the show would have been better for it. But, yeah, as you said earlier, it was like 93. So,
I
like,
I was going to say, I don't know that we were ready in 1993 for gay Power Ranger. Didn't we only, like, just get one? Admittedly, I haven't watched Power Rangers, in many a year. But didn't we get a gay one? Not in the movie.
I don't think so.
I'm not talking about the movie where she's you don't understand. And we're all supposed to like know that she means that she's queer. On Saturday morning, on the kids show, isn't there a gay one? I thought there was a gay one.
Yeah. I think there were characters that were coded. I want to say they were coded.
They were always the villain. But Lord Zed. Have you seen Lord Zed?
Oh, yeah.
Come on, sister.
No one walks out in that kind of with all that shiny accessorization. Yes. Yeah. You know, looking that suave.
In a bodysuit. Genuinely surprised that the muscle gays haven't co-opted that as one of their like go-to Halloween costumes. Lord Zed next to like a Spartan from 300. Like, how is that? Like, paint my body red and wear a metal thong. Like, how is that not gay culture?
Well, it's like it kind of fits right in. Well, and to be fair, I think that the idea of the Power Rangers themselves lends itself pretty damn well to that, but I still, like, I was called all kinds of punks and queers for liking Power Rangers. As a kid, I was the target demographic.
It's wild to me that Dungeons & Dragons... It's so wild to me that Dungeons & Dragons has had this, like, cultural evolution because, like, it was not only not cool... But parents had entire crusades about how, like, it's evil, it's demonic, like the satanic panic of the 80s and early 90s, like, stay away from that.
Yep.
And also, you mean you want to sit in the basement all weekend and do math? Like, what? And
I this had to is cool now. Research for this. I had to do research for this. I went and found there were clips of there was like a 60 Minutes thing. There was like stuff where like the stuff that it made like national news.
Oh yeah.
And it was people like freaking out.
Yeah.
That, like my son went missing because of Dungeons and Dragons. Some cult came and took him and ran off with him, or like something along those lines. There was like a huge panic, satanic panic over Dungeons and Dragons. And to be fair, even what I even appreciate more is just that not only have we come far from that, we've also come far from a Dungeons and Dragons that used to be pretty damn sexist, awfully racist. The women have different stats than the men. Crazy. That is crazy how that works. They do the same thing though. Nope, different stats. You know, she can't have strength. She can't have an 18 in strength.
She's and her armor is going to cover 3 square inches, non-consecutive inches of her body.
And why are those places here, and down there? I don't know. It's I don't know. It's wild how that works, but I don't make the rules, but
so we're in this nostalgia moment where we are kind of reclaiming our right to celebrate a childhood and all of that. And I get that there's like a sense of safety in that. I think that, you know, like kind of what we were saying earlier, there's a sense of morality, a sense of duty, and a sense of safety inside of superheroes. They get, you know, that's their whole job, right? Is to be the beacon of what's right and what's wrong, and to be the, you know, light in the dark and tell us everything is going to be okay. You did just bring something up about intersections of gender and of race and of sexual orientation and gender identity and all of these things. That didn't used to be a very popular conversation to have in geek spaces, because it was like, well, of course the blonde-haired, blue-eyed straight man is the hero, and of course the bad guy's Arab, you know, from Iran. Like, of course.
Yeah.
Duh.
Isn't this how it's supposed to be?
Sorry, you're not understanding. Okay, so of course, like, the good guy is a robot, but he's also like a white, straight white man with a family somehow, RoboCop. And all of the bad guys are black. And they're going to be like gang-coded from the inner city and go, you know, yo, 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 and all of that. But that's just life, man. That's not...
Yeah, it's like, is this not real?
That's not real.
It is... it's a testament to the era that I think the era we left, the fact that,
do you think we left it?
And I thought this was,
I'm on the same internet you are.
Well, let me put it like this. We didn't leave it so much as we got in the car. We're trying to drive away from it, but it keeps catching up. Like it keeps like pulling up beside us and just kind of like looking across. Like, we're going to get you.
There are people that saw that joke about Chris Evans being recast as the new Black Panther, and one, took it seriously, and two, thought that it was a great idea. So, I don't think we ever left.
I think we're in it.
I think we're still in it.
Is it the part of the horror movie?
You mean Wiccan is gay? Does he have to be called Wiccan? You mean Wiccan is like, wait, he has a boyfriend. Is that, are we, you shouldn't be, that's indoctrination of children because they're both minors, and that's not okay to be telling kids that you could be a gay super, like a gay Wiccan.
What? Well, it's next?
You're going to tell me that your soul is actually a piece of Mephisto that was broken off in the 80s by your psychotic witch mom?
I don't think they're prepared for the wider universe of things that exist out there, because heaven forbid that these very same people discover that not only is Wiccan a gay character, not only is Wiccan basically a construct of a person created from like the soul of one of the most like demonic entities in all existence, but also you could say I forget the exact terminology they use for him, but basically he is the queen of the Skrull Empire.
Yeah,
he's royalty.
The consort.
He is gay royalty.
The consort. Yes.
He's the consort. He is the consort. Of Hulkling. Emperor,
yeah,
Dorek, and Hulkling, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's wild to me because, you know, I think that, you know, okay, so people always want to say that, oh, you're making it political, you're putting propaganda in my comics that was never there before, but I always like to remind people about this little aspect, and it actually comes from the X-Men Defender side of things, that, well, I know a lot of people don't like the idea of certain characters being made later in life, you to be gay or queer or trans after they've been, you know, largely established to be anything.
If this is about Bobby Drake, I did tell you I have thoughts about that, but you go on. I'm going to save my thoughts.
No. I can't wait to hear.
I'm just
going to
be over
here
with my thoughts.
So I remember reading this comic called Defenders, and I always like to affectionately call this the gayest story I've ever read, but there used to be this character named Cloud, who was initially a woman. But we would later find out that Cloud is so obscure, it's not even funny. Like, honestly, outside of that Defenders run, you would have a hard time finding any comics with this character, except for a recent Defenders book that Al Ewing wrote, like, a year, two, 3 years ago or something like that, but where they actually cemented the character's identity. But during that Defenders run, went from being a woman to being a man, to flipping back and forth between being a woman and being a man. And at that time, Iceman had the hots for Cloud. Now, granted, it was only when Cloud was in their feminine form, because when they were in their masculine form, they had a thing for Moondragon. But Moondragon wasn't buying it, and which was made even more wild the fact that Moondragon is later revealed to be gay. And
listen,
the fact
that
Cloud thought being a man... Yeah. Was there any other?
Come on. That's not a straight woman. Look, Moon, come on.
No.
Also, I do love that Moondragon is basically... Moondragon is sort of like One Punch Man. If One Punch Man had trained himself so much, he was super psychic. Like, not a metahuman, not a mutant, not anything. Just like, I thought really hard and got super psychic. It's almost like, oh, wait. Did you ever see, oh, gosh, graduated undergrad? Oh, it's an early Blake Lively movie. And it's got the guy who was the cute little twink from the Britney Spears Crossroads movie. And he was in it for 5 minutes. And he was also in Tusk. And I can't remember his actual name. And he was the Mac in the Mac and PC commercials. Oh, my God. What is his name?
Yeah. Anyway, Justin Long.
Justin freaking Long.
Justin Long.
Anyways, he's got this movie with Blake Lively where they're like freshmen and they take over a school. Anyways, this ends with this kid spending all of his freshman year trying to like blow up a pineapple. And then at the very end, he just does. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the origin story of the comic book character Moondragon.
Like, honestly, that is all you really need to know. No, like, honestly, nothing else need be said about Moondragon. And her his, like, that's it. That's literally it.
That's how Moondragon got her very special psychic powers. She just trained real hard.
The thing,
there's some Moondragon fanboy out there who's about to write me the nastiest email. You don't understand. She trained with these celestial monks, and these celestial monks. Also, she has the mind stone sometimes.
Like I can hear it already. Well, it's, you know, there's always gonna be that one. You're always gonna get that one.
I don't care, Braxton. Put the keyboard away, Chadley. I don't care.
It's like, look, go outside, touch some grass. Go outside. It's comic.
Just go to Google
man.
Images and
comic.
At least Google some grass. Put your hand on the screen.
Yeah. Man, that feels like real. That's real digital grass. No, it's hilarious though, because Iceman actually, like, even once he realizes what's going on, he still has to wrestle with the fact that he's still attracted to Cloud. Not so much when Cloud is in their male form, but when they're in their female form, but at a point where he realizes that Cloud is going to go away forever, knowing what he knows about Cloud, he still wants to be with her.
Listen, I
like,
love
he's
Mulan
like, he's like,
too.
No, we can make it work. We can make it work.
I love Mulan. Li Shang is a bicon. I'm all about it. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. It's like, look, man, it's like, it was one of those situations where it was like, Cloud was like, you know that I'm not always, I'm not always female. Like, because at the time, they couldn't control it. At the time, they could not control it. So it was always just happening. So, it could literally just be like out of nowhere. Boom. Switch. But I always thought that was funny. So like, whenever I started seeing the Family Guy joke and the various and sundry other jokes about Iceman, being in the closet, I was like, you know what? I mean, y'all are mean, but I was like, I was like, he was used as a really weird allegory for that sort of thing back in the 90s, just because, like, I don't think Marvel had a really clever way to say it.
Well, and people have pointed out, like, in his earlier stories, that there was just, like, he looked too long at Warren or something, like, when Warren was in the pool. Or, there's apparently some early stuff that never made it to the page. And I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. Is this a hill I'm going to die on? No. Bobby's gay now. Okay, great. Cool. I built a bridge and got over it a long time ago. I'm not homophobic about Bobby. I just think it was, I just thought it was a weird thing to do all of a sudden. That was weird to me.
It was a ham fist. It was ham fisted.
Of like how it happened.
Yeah.
Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Time traveling Jean Grey comes from the past, comes into the future, and is like, Bobby, you're gay. And then suddenly Bobby,
like out on a dime,
like, been drawn. Like he was like a 32-year-old, you know, just like all the other superheroes, right? Like all the other guys, like, you know, tall and jacked and da 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 da, all that stuff. Suddenly, he is a 17-year-old twink in like a ice thong, like dancing, like, and I'm like,
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Is what
it was a hard shift.
It was just I just didn't love how it was. And I think there was a way to do it, and I think that it was a weird way that they chose. Of all the ways they could have chosen, they chose a whole different way that I don't think worked. But whatever, I'm over it. I don't care. I care so much.
I don't think any gay people were in the conversation, and I think it showed. I think
I just thought
I don't.
Like,
I don't.
And
think
made
there
Jean
was any...
do it. Like I do. Think, even young Jean, I feel like would have had. Jean has always had, like, tact, right? Emma now, Emma... But listen, the time to do it would have been when Emma took over Bobby's body and had discovered all these other powers that he had never figured out about himself. Like, when he turned himself into water, like, she made him turn... Like, when she figured out... Like, she was the one that figured out, oh, he is an Omega-level mutant. There could have been a throwaway line at the end of it. Like, by the time she relinquishes control back to him of, like... By the way, if you ever want to go to Decisions down the street, I would love to go with you. Or just something. And then just, like, let that organically happen. Just like, hey, by the way, while I was in there, I noticed... By the way, while I was in there, I noticed your ruby slippers on the side in your mind closet. Maybe let's see about that. Maybe we have some repression somewhere. But time-traveling Jean Grey just being like, Bobby, you like to kiss boys? Big if true?
It reminded me of the, you won't ever catch me, gay thoughts. And, like, it's just, like, the thoughts just following. Like, when Iceman's on his little slide, and he's sliding away from... Yeah. The gay thoughts. I don't know. I think, there was definitely, like, that would have been the better way to do it is to have Emma be the one to point it out. The only reason I even let it, like, in...
Or even when he was dating Polaris. If you're, like, Polaris dated Havoc. Like, when he was dating Polaris, you would have been like, baby, this is not only not working, but I feel like you have the hots for my ex-boyfriend or something. Like, just literally. Right. But this does bring up a topic that a lot of disgusting, you know, people on social media typically bring up, especially, like, ever since Captain Marvel. But, like, the idea of this, of something, you know, forced inclusion and the Mary Sue and all of this, where, oh, well, she's a girl, so of course now she has to be the most powerful and she's stronger than the boys, and that's wrong, which, one, tells me you've never read a comic because the girls are always more powerful. Number two, this idea of, like, forced inclusion, or that suddenly, you know, like, the comics are overcorrecting, and why can't it just be natural storytelling? What are your thoughts on the idea of, like, forced inclusion? And do you think, I mean, one, I think that we're both in agreement that science fiction, fantasy, comic book, superhero media was real white for a real long time. It was a real specific kind of superhero that was allowed to be, you know, a main title character. I even see it these days. Like, people love Storm, and Storm has been in the comics a long time, but I feel like everything happening with her in the last few years, people are just like, you're forcing Storm to be stronger than she's supposed to be. So walk me down your thoughts about this. How do you contend with this? How do you see, because these are houses that have been around for a very, very long time. DC, Marvel, these film studios.
Yeah.
There is the conversation of evolving with the times, and there's the conversation of suddenly, you know, kneecapping people's favorite heroes. How do you thread that needle?
So for me, when it comes to, like, the Mary Sue conversation, I'm like, man, look, they're all Mary Sues. Every
Stan Lee said, "Who nurses. Would win in a fight? Whoever the writer wants."
Exactly.
That's why Squirrel Girl can't be beaten. Squirrel Girl's power is talking to squirrels and being the luckiest little lady in all of Marvel Comics.
And it's
sorry. You're talking.
It's proof positive. Yeah. No. You're good because you didn't say anything wrong. You're correct. It's and I tell people this all the time. When someone says, "Who wins if so and so hero fights so and so hero?" The fans. That's who wins. We win. Unless it's bad. unless it's a bad versus, then we all lose. But I think that when it comes to the superhero conversation, I think that sometimes you do have to evolve. You have to evolve. Now, there is something to be said for evolving poorly. Mm-hmm. Even if the end result is good, how you get there can make or break whether people you want to rock with it. Because you brought up Captain Marvel, who, oddly enough, unironically, also one of my favorite superheroes.
She's great.
And
I've always been a little... Like, listen, I understand that women have the slutty costumes, but I wanted to see the black leotard make... I wanted the black leotard with the black lightning... With the gold lightning. I wanted that with the red sash. Yeah. I just... That is the book that I grew up... That is the version of that character that I grew up on. I wanted that in the movie somewhere, somehow. But I know I'm never going to get it because Brie Larson is not going to put on a bathing suit. And honestly, it would look weird in live action. I'm going to be so real.
No, don't get me wrong. When I found out that Brie Larson was going to be Carol Danvers in the MCU, that was actually one of my first thoughts. I was like, oh man, dude, are they going to do the whole thing where like she's Ms. Marvel first and then become Captain Marvel? I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to see. Oh, geez. But then the more I started thinking about
Or make the big feminist statement where she's Ms. Marvel.
Yeah.
A Ms. Marvel.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Incredible actress. Yeah. You know you're not. Come on.
You are, like, first off, you're lying to me. And you're lying to yourself. And I think that's now you're wasting everybody's time.
You're just mad that she could punch Thor in the face.
Right. Well, and not only that, but the thing is, and I think this also tells on a lot of people, Ms. Marvel and Captain Marvel, there are no difference between her character other than the costume. And I know plenty of people who would constantly say, well, I just liked her better when she was Ms. Marvel because she wasn't some like SJW, like always trying. I was like, first off, she was Marvel's first feminist. Like she was like Marvel's first official feminist. So I was like, you are a lie and the truth is not within you. If you think that she's not like she is literally everything you just described.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was one of the earliest iterations of a SJW in Marvel Comics. Not like in comics as a whole, but in just that corner of publishing. And there is no difference.
And she's where they took her storyline and what they did with it and the rogue of it all. I mean, honestly, how that was handled in comics, it was actually really, I mean, it was kind of groundbreaking. It was smart. It was sad. It was all the things that comics can make you do and only a comic can make you do because you have to say yes to a lot of stuff. But once you say yes to a lot of stuff to get into the storytelling portion of comics, it's like, oh, there are things that only certain mediums can do. And a comic book can tell us stories about ourselves in such a way that very few other kinds of stories can. I think that's why people look at these as modern myths, because they're able to suspend our disbelief enough, put us into a whole different world, give us different stakes, but then still tell us a uniquely human story. And hers is about consent and power and what it means to be a woman and feminism and all of these things.
Yeah. I remember going back and looking at some of the comics that people love to put on a pedestal and say, oh, these things did not have any politics to them whatsoever. And there was no forced diversity. There was no none of this. There was no none of that. And when I go back and look at those things, I go back and look at them and they were all things that were organically done. Carol Danvers' own inclusion was as a love interest slash companion. To the original Captain Marvel and Marvel Comics, at least, you had, like, when you had the X-Men reintroduced in 1975, it was literally a rainbow coalition. It was quite literally a rainbow coalition of people. I mean, you had Africa, you had Japan, you had Ireland, and what else was it? Germany. Yeah, Germany. Russia.
I was gonna say, I've got it over there if you want to grab it.
Yeah, I was like, it was a lot of people. It went from being literally an all-white party to quite literally being
five white most kids that look like they've never been hungry a day in their life. To an African goddess, you know, Russian farmer.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
It's just like you could literally work your way down the list. And that's even before we get to the fact that there's like an indigenous man on the squad.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there were literally like almost all your bases were, yeah, with the exception of a few major ones, almost all of them were touched. Like, they would have added any more diversity to that team. Like, then I would have been like, okay, all right, y'all, calm down. All right, y'all calm down, okay? We do ours first, then y'all come in later, okay? We get another squad in a little later. We can't do this all in one issue. It's too much. They're not going to buy it. The racist white men are not going to pick this up off the shelf if they see too many clears here on the page. I think that we just really need to go back to pay attention to what we used to see in comics. Like, there was a time where we didn't see people that were not white in comics. So whenever I see someone get mad that a character is suddenly not white anymore, I just always point to that. I don't care whether it's in comics or if it's in movies or TV shows. Whenever someone wants to get upset, I just say, hey, look, back in the day when these characters were made, everybody was white. There was no diversity. So I kind of look at it as reparations. But when it comes to like some of the stuff like Riri Williams and in the case of Jane Foster, which, by the way, phenomenal looking show. I saw one of the most hateful things ever in response to it. Blew my mind. I don't want
it's
this
not
person
even out
to,
yet. How do people?
It's not even out yet.
That's.
I don't even want this person to find out who else is in this. Because their head will explode. Marvel had pointed out that there was going to be a drag queen character on the show.
Shade.
This character's probably going to have.
Is it confirmed? Is it confirmed that she's Shade? I saw the still. I saw the still, and she's got the green hair. She's got the green hair. She's got the piercings. That's Shade. Shade was designed off of her. Shade.
I would want it to be so bad.
That's a mutant.
But that's literally. I think it sucks because people are going to see that type of character and focus negatively too much on that they're losing the plot, that this is a show that primarily has a black cast. It has a primarily black and brown cast. Almost every principal character is either black or brown. There's at least two or three characters that I'm almost positive of are either gay, trans, or drag queen, queer in some fashion. You know, some way, shape, form, or fashion, you're going to have those types of representation. I'm actually shocked more people aren't freaking out about the one trans character that is on the show. Or I don't know if their character is
trans,
but the actor themselves is trans.
give them time. Listen,
they'll figure it out.
You don't have enough faith in these internet bigots. Listen, they'll get to them. They're just working their way down. Honestly, I think well, part of it might be they're just hoping that if they don't talk about it, the show will go away. Maybe if we don't,
if
we don't talk about it, the show will go away.
Well, they did that with X-Men 97. They did it with X-Men 97.
And that clearly worked.
I mean, well, I think also a lot of it too was the fact that, and I've watched some of these people in real time fall apart. There were people who were literally saying, oh, this show's gonna bomb, it's gonna fail, they made Morph non-binary, so this is gonna be stupid, it's gonna be virtue signaling, it's gonna be the worst show ever, it's gonna be pandering to too many people. And a lot of them realized real fast, and this is how I know that there's, I'm not saying there's hope for all these people, but there's at least a little hope for some of them, is that a lot of these people's fan bases turned on because they liked the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, well, like Melanie Mack, who no one should know about, but sadly I know about her. So now sadly y'all have to as well. You're better for it, but I'm about to ruin that for you.
I'm so sorry.
She is a person. Yeah, she's a person who has made a career of throwing around the F slur.
Ooh.
Quite liberally, mind you. She is a Christian fundamentalist who looks like a flyleaf reject. She looks like honestly, a lot of these people, they're rejects from the things that they tried to be. Like, she looks like a girl, like, if you look her up, she looks like a woman who probably really wanted to be a punk rock, a Christian punk rock singer, but just couldn't quite cut the mustard. So she decided that now it's all our problem, but... She basically made a video, like, just making terrible takes about X-Men 97. It was, there were a lot of people who weren't a part of her audience that were saying this. There were lots of people who were also a part of her audience who were basically like, yeah, this take aged like milk. Like, this take aged, like, this, everything you're saying about X-Men 97 is aged like milk. Like, yeah, I think there's some things that people are more willing to be okay with depending on what it is. And I think X-Men is one of those, like, sacred cows that, like, most smart people, I'm only going to include smart people in this, most smart people, when they see the X-Men, they kind of know what time it is. So, you're going to see some diversity.
I just don't understand how you can watch or read or consume any X-Men media and be like, I hate the gays. Baby.
Well,
what?
So... I showed this to my...
They do it in DC, and Wonder Woman has a panel where she's like, baby, I grew up in an island of women. Do you think I don't know? I remember that panel. That wasn't that long ago either. That was in the last 10 years or so, I think, where that panel came out in a Wonder Woman comic where she's having a conversation.
Yes.
And they're like, you know, have you only ever been with men or something? She's like, are you an idiot? Stupid.
And I can pinpoint
how many times did you get hit on the head as a child? My island only has women on it. Do you think we just sit and knit or something?
Like, do we wait for men to show up?
So do you think we're just sitting on the shore on the shores of the island with our legs out, going, could a man come by the island?
Wait a minute. A man. I'm here for the
Have you heard of Poison
I'm
Ivy?
I'm here for the Blanche Devereaux.
Have you heard of Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn? Have you?
I can literally tell you right now, there are so many gay characters, so many, like, okay, so when you look at, what's going on with, like, a Wonder Woman, who is objectively one of the gayest characters outside of, like, Steve Trevor be damned. One of the gayest characters you could possibly have.
Honestly, that is comics. Like, if you told me that Wonder Woman was just going to come on out as a lesbian, I would be like, yep.
It makes sense. Well, that makes sense. And honestly, it would be...
Honestly, if you told me she was ace, the most I would normal also thing. Be like that. Honestly, if you told me that Wonder Woman was ace, I would also be like, yep, that tracks. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get
it. Oh, no, 100%. It's... And honestly, you know what? I could okay. I'm not trying to tell DC what to do with their shit, but maybe I am. Look,
DC hire us.
If DC, yeah, because I'm not gonna lie, that would some of those things would be the like okay. I know that there's a temptation to want to make Diana bi or pan. I think there's a very good argument to make for Diana to be asexual. I could really sit there if you gave me the time, I could probably come up with a very long list of reasons why it makes the most sense. Because when I think of Wonder Woman,
I've read
a lot of Wonder Woman
storylines. Not once have I ever been like, oh, that relationship she was in was the heart of this story. Like, I just
right. It's like I love Steve Trevor. Don't get me wrong. He tries hard. He tries very hard. I don't see her as someone who belongs with anybody.
No. Like, all of the DC victory, of all of anybody in the Justice League, she's like duty above else. Like,
yeah.
You know, I am the job. Like, I am the shield. I am the lasso. I am the everything. Like, that's, you know, that's her. That's Wonder Woman.
And even when I see her in situations where, like, oh, she clearly just, has partaken of the reading of the Bible behind the closed door. I just, even then, I'm still kind of like, I don't know. I just don't. Diana doesn't strike me as someone who's just always longing to to you know, to get laid. I just like she strikes me as someone who, like, you know, if the mood were to ever strike her at some point, maybe, you know, but it's not like she's going out of her way to do it. I feel like it's one of those things that, like, if it happens, she's like, look, I gotta save this world. This world is jacked up.
So in both,
it's jacked up. This is mine.
In both film in both film and comics at this point, they've been around a long time. Now, the comics have been around the better part of the last century, and the films have been around, you know, MCU has been around for a few decades, Superman's been doing movies for several decades, Batman as well, Wonder Woman had media all the way back into the 70s, so there's a lot of media to catch up on. People who might be listening to this and think, maybe there's a superhero for me, maybe there's more to this stuff, Devil Wears Prada voice, than I thought. Maybe I want to dip my toes in. But, and this is what I've seen people criticize the MCU specifically about, but I've also seen a lot of people just kind of say, well, you know, I want to watch that, but I don't want to watch 17 other movies. Or I want to read this issue, but I don't want to have to read all of these other books to read this. I just kind of want to get in. Do you have any tips for people who are superhero curious?
Yes, I do, actually. So this is what I say. It's really going to come down to what you like, but this is the general thing I will tell you. If you're afraid of the prospect of, like, trying to figure out where to get into with, like, the big two, like DC and Marvel, I actually say it's a perfect excuse to go walk across the street and check out the other publishers that exist, like Image, Boom Studios, Dynamite, AWA, and Dark Horse, IDW, because they tend to have comics that don't require as much of an investment of your energy or time, because they tell a lot of shorter stories and some stories that are very similar to some you might find in Marvel. I always joke that what a lot of Marvel and DC writers do is that they get their name out there, Marvel and DC, and then go run off and tell a story that's probably better somewhere else. Or Marvel and DC hires those writers who told a better story somewhere else, looking at you, Jonathan Hickman, and called him back to write an X-Men story that was eerily similar to East of West, which he had already written. So I just always like to throw that out there.
I can't tell if this is Krakoa shade or if this is... What is the direction of this shade?
You know what it is? It's a one day I was reading Ten of Swords and I was like, I get it now. I was like, I see where this is going now. But no, it just, I still love it. I still love it for what it is. But I will say, yeah, go read some of these other books. I will say that, like, speaking of that era, House of X era, if you're an X-Men fan, is a really great place to start. If you're a Marvel guy that really wants to get into, you know, some of the Avenger stuff, I'm gonna be honest with you, good luck with that, because it's kind of various and sundry. But I would definitely say that Jed MacKay has a run right now.
If you're new to the comics, yeah. The Avengers were always like the C-tier team, and the only reason they got a movie was because all of the A and B listers already had movie rights sold. The Avengers don't have a lot of great stories.
They couldn't use them.
Yeah.
No.
When they announced Guardians of the Galaxy as a movie, I was like, wait, is this a joke? Is the raccoon is what? This is like a this isn't even like a C-list team. This is like do we have J-tier team? Like, is there like a element OP team down there? Like, what do you mean Guardians is getting a movie?
But my wife did the thing she always does whenever there's like a new movie that's coming out, she'll ask me, because she doesn't really, I mean, she knows about comics, but she doesn't like really like dig into them that deep. So she kind of like nudged me and was like, who are the Guardians? Like, what's up with the Guardians of the Galaxy? And my response was literally, oh, just a no-name team that a lot of people are probably going to suddenly pretend to be knowledgeable about.
Yeah, it's like nobody knew about this or cared about it. And if you remembered it, you remembered it in passing. Like, you remembered it because
it was like the same thing.
Something, something Corsair, something, something Cyclops, something, something. They were there in space with the Starjammers or something. Blah, blah, blah. Like, maybe.
It was the same thing I said when they announced that they were making an Eternals movie. I was like, okay. I mean, don't get me wrong.
That was good, though. That was such a good movie. It was such a bold, interesting movie. Yeah. I'm somebody that thinks that Marvel never fell off. I don't think Marvel ever fell off.
No.
I think they just tried new things.
I don't believe in that. Marvel's dead. Marvel needs...
Yeah.
Stop. You can't... You can't be, you can't fall off if you never took a step off the ledge. Like, yeah. Eternals what I think was a great movie. And I would often tell people, if you like said movie, Karen Gillan literally wrote the best Eternals you're ever going to read. And sadly, no one read it. So I always say, if you want something closer to that level of storytelling, you do that.
Also, DC's the best speedster because ever.
They restart every 10 years.
Yeah. Also, the best speedster in any media ever. Like,
yes, it was. I think that if
and
you
we got a gay superhero,
really, you got a gay. Yes, you actually, not only that, gay, married, had a kid, black and brown family. And were pretty normal, like, and they weren't like, they were pretty normalized. They weren't caricatures. They weren't caricatures of gayness. Like, it wasn't like, ooh, we're going to make these guys like super hyper dialed up to like 20 million so that people realize they're, it's like, no, like these are two dudes. That kiss was weak. I'm going to say that as a straight. I thought that kiss felt. I was like, I've kissed my grandmother with more passion. That's all I'm going to say about that. But no, I was like, that's my only complaint with that. That kiss was weak.
That are scared of dipping their toes in. Like I saw that like people with like Quantumania or something like with Oh, there's so much. I don't know how to get in. I'm like, don't. You know, you can just have the permission to read what you want to read or watch what you want to watch. Like, if the only thing that you like are the really grounded stories, like your your Thunderbolts, your Bucky Barnes, your Captain America and the Winter Soldier, and you know, those kinds of stories, you could just consume those. That's the same in the comics. You don't have to. I read what I liked, and then I read the crossovers sometimes, like the big events sometimes.
Yeah.
But even what I don't think people understand, even in the big crossover events, there's still so many crossovers. Like, there's like a main crossover book that'll come out, but then there's still all these other like secondary and tertiary issues. You don't even have to read all of those. You can
and
if you're a
completionist. Don't even matter.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
And if there's something that you miss, you
can
just Google it.
It's FOMO.
Yeah. Like, read what you want. Read what interests you. I like mutants. I like gay superheroes. Mm-hmm. And all the mutants are gay. Even the ones that are straight. They're all gay. And that's what I like. The witches.
They all have a coming out story.
I don't love Iron Man. I never liked Iron Man. I still don't think I've seen Iron Man 3. No, I think I've seen it. I've seen it, but I've blocked it out of my memory.
It's not memorable.
You know, there's some where I'm just like, I still haven't seen Echo. I think I'm okay. I haven't seen Echo. Yeah, but that's the thing. Like,
For the actors involved, but
I mean, like, watch what you want to watch. If you want superpowers, or if you want magic, or if you want beat 'em up, if you want grounded, if you want space, if you want celestial, there's something out there for all of that. And the thing is, you don't have to read all the other stuff to get it. There's going to be a little intro sheet at the beginning. Nope. Here's who these faces are. Here's what happened in the lead up to this episode or this issue. Just read the recap, Google the recap, ask people, and then just dive in. Read what you want. But here's the thing.
I'm going to give you a little inside baseball. Eventually,
you're going to come up to somebody with the last name of Summers. It doesn't matter what their first name is. The last name's going to be Summers at some point. Is it Rachel? Is it Hope? Is it Jean? Is it Scott? Is it... If you meet somebody, it's kind of like a Skywalker. If you see a book and the person, one of the characters has the last name of Summers, shit's going to get weird at some point. Just know that going in.
Yeah.
What even is a Hope
and
Summers?
I'll give you a little... a very... weird replacement for Sync. That's all I know.
Back at an Omega level mutant all of a sudden. Like, what?
It's like, they had to find ways to separate them. And they couldn't figure it out.
Like, what are y'all doing? What even is this? What are y'all doing?
If you want, and this is coming straight from a guy who talks to a lot of people who write comic books. Man, a lot of the time, and this is everyone's free ticket to know that they don't have to read everything. A lot of the times, they just be doing stuff. I mean, yeah, they're in an email, they're in like a Slack together, but like, there's never anything going on where it's like, ooh, I'm going to write this in this book because you're doing this over here. And like, case in point, I'm going to use this as a perfect example. I'm not trying to tell everybody's business, but I'm going to tell a little bit of business. The current Storm and Phoenix books, one of the things people have constantly been pointing out, and I've been pointing out, is that these books are doing a lot of the same stuff at the exact same time that makes it look like those two books are about to have some kind of a crossover, and I have lobbied for it. But I actually have it on good authority from the writer of Storm that it is just a happy coincidence. It is a happy coincidence.
But I'm so there is glad no it's Storm because or I Phoenix win. Lee.
Yeah.
I'm so glad yeah. it's happening because like, I win.
That's it.
Who wins? I win.
Exactly.
Me.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You. Nobody. Look, y'all don't understand this. Nobody else wins. Nobody else. Just Don.
I love it that's so it. Much.
And that's the rule. I don't make the rules. I don't make the rules. I just play by them, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, okay. You don't have to read everything. I don't.
Let's, I want to be respectful of your time. We're a little over, and I want to to get, do you have... You get to pick one. Now, we've talked about why superheroes are important to people in general, why superheroes are important to you, and da-da-da-da-da. Mm. What is the one single issue, DC, Marvel, beyond, in between, whatever, one single issue of one single book that you read and has just stuck with you ever since? And you were like, this is why I read comics.
Man, that is... God, that's tough.
Do you need a second? Because I've got one if you want a second to think.
I got this. I actually think I got this. To pick a single issue, there are a few issues of any comic that are probably quite as important to me as... And man, I don't remember the...
That's okay. Nobody ever remembers the number. I only have it because issue, I Googled it.
I'll just say this. I'll tell you when it takes place. It takes place during the Mark Wade run of Daredevil. And basically, there's a specific point in it where I learned something about Matt Murdock as a character that I never really thought about, you know, him being blind. And it's the fact that like he is the only white man in existence that is... I can actually say he is colorblind. So, you know, because he is blind, you know, a lot of people think their radar sight, oh, that means he can tell, he can see people because of radar sense, but he actually can't. He actually can't really just look at someone with his radar sense and tell whether they're white or black or, you know, Latino or Asian or indigenous, whatever. He can't see any of that stuff. So when he saves people, he's just saving people. He doesn't care what they, you know, obviously, you know, he's blind, so of course he probably doesn't care what they look like. But it was a really cool case study in how, you know, he doesn't, like, those things don't enter his mind when he's saving a life. That he's selfless and, above all else, just a person who just does the right thing because, you know, it's the right thing to do. And he doesn't focus on whether the person he saved was a white person or not, or a black person or not. It doesn't matter. And that was something that kind of changed my perspective on the vigilante genre of comics, like, as a whole, because it's not to say that other characters think that way or even don't think that way, but I do think it says something that certain characters don't go to certain neighborhoods. And I like the fact that Daredevil as a character has been in what is by popular media considered one of the worst neighborhoods in the entire nation. And the fact that Daredevil has that line of thinking, it's important, I think. And I think more people should maybe think that way. Yeah. Not saying you should be colorblind, but
who's your Daredevil?
It shouldn't matter.
Are you a Ben Affleck truther or are you a...
No. God's no. For so long that's just his name to me.
I'm sit in discomfort. I'm not even going to Google it for you.
Like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, wait a minute. Who the fuck? What is his name?
If it makes you feel better, I got to the, are you a Ben Affleck truther? And then I just stopped myself because I also couldn't remember his name.
Well, it's... Yeah, so see, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this for myself because, like, I just can't sit in it for too long because it's gonna like kill me. But yeah, I like, for me, he's Charlie always Cox. Been Charlie Cox. There you go, Charlie Cox. Look, Charlie, you're the best. I'm sorry. Like, you, where's Keke Palmer when I need her? I need the sorry to this man's name.
I love you. I love your work. I have no idea who you are. I would not know you in the street. I am so sorry to you.
Look, well, you know, it's like I always joke with people, like. Every actor is who I know them as.
Sure, sure.
Whenever I see, like, someone like like a Liv Tyler. Liv Tyler.
You're always
Liv
Arwen.
Tyler. You're always going to be Arwen. You're never not, like, if I see Bill Murray. If I see Bill Murray, Bill does a few characters that Bill Murray mm-hmm. could potentially be, but, like, he's always going to be Peter Venkman to me. It's just, I don't make the rules. It just, you know, it is what it is. Hell, I still call Anthony Mackie Papa Doc, and that man is Captain America right now.
Wow, the disrespect. The disrespect. Ernie, have you ever thought that you might be racist? Have you ever thought that you might be racist, Ernie?
Ernie,
during Pride Month, on this, the eve of Juneteenth, are you?
Look, everybody is somebody. I can't help who they are. But no, I call him Captain America, but every now and again, I have to remind him he was Papa Doc so that way he doesn't forget where he came from.
My single issue.
Yeah, I gotta have those humble beginnings.
My single issue, I did Google the issue number. I remembered the book, and I remembered when, and I remembered the story, but I didn't remember the number, and I wanted to be prepared because I thought you would remember the number for yours because you're the blurred without fear. Is ultimate. And what's crazy about this, I do not like this character. I don't like this character at all. I think this character is so wildly overused in every version of Marvel media. I need a decade without this character. I need a moratorium on books that include this character. But this is a Wolverine story. I don't like Wolverine. And I don't have anything against him. I just think he's so wildly... He's on every team.
He's overrated.
You cannot kill him. How is he not considered Omega? Just because you cannot... You can't kill him.
Can't die.
Somebody blew him up all the way down to his skeleton, and somebody was like, oh, well, he regrew back because, like, somebody forgot to burn off a single molecule of his DNA that was attached to the adamantium, so he was able to regrow himself. And I'm like, the hell? Anyways, no, that's not the issue. It's Ultimate X-Men number 41. It's Ultimate X-Men number 41. Wolverine is sent in, and he kills a kid. Have you ever seen this issue?
Yes. Yeah.
This kid develops a mutant power, and the mutant power, we don't entirely know like what the mechanics are because the kid was not alive enough long enough for us to study it. But basically, it just dissolves everyone around him in a specific vicinity. And the vicinity is wide enough that it pretty much encompasses his entire town. Wolverine is sent in because he has this advanced healing ability, and he gets sent in to handle it. And like, what is it? Who's the bad guy? Da, 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 da. What is the problem here? And there's no bad guy, and there's no nefarious force. There's no alien. There's no demon. There's no anything. It is a kid. And this kid just so happened to lose the genetic lottery in the worst way. And I remember the issue ends with him, you know, the kid's like, you know, I'm going to die a virgin. I'm going to, you know, da, 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 da. And he's like, do you think I could have, you know, I could have been an X-Man if like one molecule, one chromosome or something had been just a little off? And he's like, maybe. And then Wolverine gives him a beer, his first beer. So at least he's had a beer. And then Wolverine walks out of the cave where he's found this kid, and he's killed that kid. And it's like, I am not doing this issue justice. You need to go read it. It is a powerful, powerful story. But it is one of the reasons, like, it is why I read comics. And I like that issue because I've always said superheroes, science fiction, fantasy, these kinds of stories are able to tell us things about ourselves that other kinds of contemporary fiction can't, because they allow us to step out of our world, say yes to a few sets of parameters that allow us to kind of see certain kinds of social issues, civil issues, ecological issues, environmental impact, you know, all of these things from just a slightly different perspective. And when you do that, sometimes it can flip a switch and change hearts and minds, because now we're talking about superheroes. Now we're talking about gods and demons. Now we're talking about, you know, and the difficult decisions they have to make, or the humanity behind, you know, this woman who becomes a god, or this god that becomes a man, or something like that. And that's one of those issues that has just always stuck with me because of the arc of storytelling that it's able to have in just a single issue. Is just so cool. So, and so complex, and there's no good answer. Like, what would you have done differently? How do you fix it for this kid? What else could have happened? You know? And it's, oh, that's why I read comics, because it asks really complicated questions, and there are really complicated answers every time, and there's no right one.
Love that, because it's a Wolverine. It'd be Wolverine.
I hate Wolverine.
it makes sense in that moment. I'm not a...
I hate Wolverine.
Please believe, not a Wolverine fan myself. I was a Gambit kid growing up. But,
my mom liked Gambit. When I was watching the Saturday morning cartoon in the 90s, she's like, I like Gambit. Gambit's cute.
I was one of those kids that wanted to have like the trench coat and the pool stick and swore up and down that I was... And I would always walk around with a deck of playing cards for no good reason. Oh, Could not throw a card to save my life. But I wanted to. I tried really hard. But yeah, I like stories like that because they present you with some really not just tough choices, but they ask you what you think of the character you just witnessed do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do we, how do you look at that character afterward that they had to do something that, you know, most people would not be able to do? Like, yeah, it's tough. It's tough. And I think that's, as a whole, is why comics, to me, are one of the greatest mediums out there. Because, I mean, like you said, very few stories can be told that way. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see that in like a... I mean, yeah, I'm sure someone's tried to do it in movies and TV before, but I don't think it could be done in the same, like, with the same level of gravitas.
Well, and that's another thing, that sometimes the original medium that the story is told in is the best medium. Sometimes the game is the better medium than the movie adaptation. Sometimes the comic is better. And that's what, like, when people kind of ragged on, like, Quantumania or Thor Love and Thunder or some of those movies, I was like, listen, I get where you're coming from. I get that it feels silly at times, but I'm here to tell you that sitting in the theater watching those movies, I was like, this is what a comic book is like. This is these movies, this weird spectacle soap opera, just go with it. Okay, fine. This is what a comic book is like. Is every issue great? No, but you're here for the ride. You know, you're here for all of it. And it's weird and it's wonderful and it's an escape. Ernie Carruthers, thank you so much for being here on Head on Fire.
Thank you.
I could talk to you forever. If people would like to listen to you forever, where can people find you on social media?
You know, you can find me. Well, for one, you can find me on YouTube, youtube.com/@blurwithoutfear, because they do that now. And you can find me. I don't really social media a lot of places outside of that, except
he's rowdy on Threads.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say some wild stuff. I, you know what? Honestly, if you follow me on Threads, I do a lot of shit posting. So at least that's how I view what I usually. I'm usually just like, yep, I don't put a lot of thought into what I do. I just say things and I move on with my day. But you can follow me on Threads, Blur Without Fear. And yeah, if you see me anywhere else, it's probably my account, but someone probably hacked it.
Before I let you go, I do have one final question for you, and it is. If you could pick a superpower, what would it be?
Man, the power that would save me a lot of time and a lot of energy, and it would be teleportation.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Let me teleport wherever I want to go. I don't want to run anywhere.
Now, I want to run here's anywhere. The thing.
I'm lazy.
Are you, what kind of teleportation? Because we've got a lot of teleporters out there. And I think the worst version of teleportation that I've ever seen in the comics is Lila Cheney. Do you know who Lila Cheney is?
Yeah.
She's the rock star who can teleport, but she's
intergalactic rock star.
An intergalactic teleporter. So she could teleport you from one side of town to the other, but she'd have to teleport you to Saturn first. I don't entirely know why that's the limit on her power, but she's an intergalactic teleporter, so she has to teleport you to like some other end of space and back, which is the worst. That's the worst.
See, it's kind of a tough one because there's a couple of teleporters I really like, but I'll just say the easiest one would be Manifold. I would want Manifolds because it's kind of broken.
Not even going through Nightcrawler. We're flying through hell.
I don't want to leave behind any. Yeah, I don't want any like fart smells or anything left behind. I don't want to go through any kind of weird like limbo dimensions. I'll just talk to the universe and be like, hey, look, I just really need to get over there. Can you get me over? Okay, cool. All right. I'm over there now. Yay. That's me. I'm all for minimum effort teleportation.
I love that. Perfect answer. Thanks, Ernie.
Thank you for having me.
And that is going to do it here for this episode of Head on Fire. My thanks to my guest, Ernie Carruthers, the Blurred Without Fear. You can find him over on his YouTube channel at youtube.com/blurredwithoutfear. And of course, like he said, he's also Blurred Without Fear all over social media. Now, as far as me goes, as far as me, your host goes, I have a lot of stuff coming up. I have my debut young adult fantasy novel, Verity Vox and the Curse of Foxfire, available for pre-order right now. If you order through Anderson's Bookshop, a locally owned women-run bookstore here in the Chicagoland area, you get free art. The first 10 pre-orders get to hold a prop from the story. I'm not going to tell you more, but it is a wax melt and it smells really, really good. You get stickers and of course your copy will be signed. A lot of people have been asking me, how can I get signed copies? Where will signed copies be available? If you pre-order your book through Anderson's Bookshop, all of those pre-order copies will be signed because I am also doing my big book launch there on August 4th. Links to get tickets to that are going to be in the show notes. Also, I know this feels like I've got a lot going on, but it's only because I've got a lot going on. My next nonfiction book, Where Did Everybody Go? It is a deep dive into the loneliness epidemic, is coming out this November from Simon Audio. It is an audiobook exclusive, which does mean it's coming out as an audiobook first. However, don't fret, there is the possibility that it could come out as like an ebook or paperback. But for now, it is an audiobook first. And you know what? That's really, really cool because you and I get to kind of gently walk through one of these sticky life topics together. I'm really excited about that. Links to pre-order that are also below. My website is bydonmartin.com and you can find me all over social media at @bydonmartin. I'm gonna go, but remember, never stop seeking illumination like a man with his head on fire seeks water. Be well.